Ever feel like counseling theories are just like this giant puzzle, like a million pieces? And we're diving into that world today. But no worries, we've got the picture on the box, so to speak. We'll be exploring those key concepts from a counseling textbook, and we even have some fascinating insights from Dr. Pam Turner's lecture.
Yeah, that's like we've got the cheat sheet
Yeah.
to understanding human behavior instead of getting lost in all that jargon, you know.
Yeah.
We'll be focusing on those, the most practical and useful takeaways.
Love that. Love that. Let's start with the heavy hitter, the one and only Sigmund Freud.
Okay.
He's practically a household name. I mean, come on.
Right.
But his theories about the unconscious mind, I don't know about you, but they still kind of blow my mind.
Yeah, for sure. It's like he's saying there's this whole other world operating below the surface
Right.
that's influencing our thoughts and our feelings and our actions. Have you ever, like I'm sure you have, made a decision you couldn't even explain?
Oh, yeah.
Freud would totally say that's your unconscious calling the shots.
Okay, that actually makes a lot of sense. And then there's the whole defense mechanism thing. So is that
Yeah.
our ego, like trying to protect us from ourselves?
Yeah, exactly. Think of defense mechanisms like those little white lies that we tell ourselves to avoid those like uncomfortable truths. Like if you've ever, for example, you've ever convinced yourself that you're not really that mad about something
Oh, yeah.
when deep down you know you're bothered.
Oh, yeah.
You've experienced repression. Congratulations.
Oh, I'm very familiar with repression. It's like my specialty. But speaking of fascinating characters, Freud's protege, Carl Jung, took things in a more symbolic direction, like all about archetypes, right? Like, are those the original personality types?
Kind of, yeah. Jung believed that these like universal patterns of behavior, like say the hero or the sage, right?
Right.
They're actually embedded in our collective unconscious.
Yeah.
So it's this shared well of experiences and symbols that transcends like time and culture. Think of it like this. Why are we so drawn to stories about heroes who overcome obstacles?
Right.
Jung would say that's because the hero archetype is resonating with something deep within us.
So instead of reading a self-help book, I could just analyze my dreams for Jungian archetypes.
There you go.
I like the sound of that.
That's it.
Okay, now, shifting gears completely,
Okay.
let's talk about Alfred Adler.
Oh.
Have you ever noticed how your own birth order seems to play out in your relationships? I don't know if I'm the only one.
Oh, 100%.
Really?
Yeah.
Wait, so you're saying my tendency to be bossy isn't just a personality flaw?
Well,
It's because I'm a firstborn.
could be. Adler would say it's a strong possibility. He believed that our birth order can have a significant impact on our personality, for sure, and how we interact with the world, like the youngest child.
Okay.
Often the center of attention might grow up to be more attention-seeking
Okay.
or charming.
That makes so much sense.
Right.
Okay, now I'm dying to know what my middle child friend is secretly compensating for.
Right.
But before we go down that rabbit hole,
Yeah, let's not.
let's talk about Carl Rogers. He's the one who brought in the warm fuzzies, right?
Yes. Absolutely. Rogers, he was all about unconditional positive regard in therapy. So imagine a space, right, where you feel completely accepted and valued no matter what you say.
Right.
That's the kind of environment that he believed fostered true growth and healing.
I feel calmer just thinking about it. Okay, now let's get dramatic.
Okay.
Gestalt therapy. They're all about the here and now. And I've always been curious about that empty chair technique.
Yes. Well, it's not as strange as it sounds.
Okay.
So imagine like you're struggling with some unresolved conflict with someone.
Right.
So in Gestalt therapy, you might actually have a conversation with that person, but they're represented by an empty chair.
Oh.
It's a way to process those emotions and gain new perspectives.
It's like having the conversation you wish you could have in real life, but without the other person actually being there to interrupt you.
Exactly. Yeah.
Now let's talk about the behaviorists.
Okay,
They
perfect.
weren't so much into the whole feelings thing, were they?
No,
No.
not really, not so much. Think of them as the scientists of the therapy world.
So they were focused on observable behaviors, right? They believe that our actions are shaped by conditioning. So remember Pavlov's dogs?
Oh, yeah, they drooled at the sound of a bell
Yes.
because they learned to associate it with food. Classic.
Classic.
Yeah,
Exactly. It's
yeah.
classical conditioning. And then there's the operant conditioning, where those behaviors are learned through rewards and punishments, right?
Okay.
Think about how we train our pets. Positive reinforcement for good behavior.
Right. Dr. Turner actually shared a really funny anecdote about this,
Oh, I love her anecdotes.
about using this technique to encourage your partner to be tidier.
Oh.
And it's like, it's amazing how well it works, even in relationships.
Stealing that for sure.
Yeah.
I'm all about adding like new tools to my relationship toolbox. Okay.
Yes.
Finally, let's talk about the cognitive revolution. This is where things get really interesting for anyone who's ever felt, ruled by their thoughts, right? Okay, so we've got Freud and his unconscious, and Adler and his birth order theories, and Rogers with the good vibes.
Yeah.
But how do these theories like actually translate into counseling techniques? How do they actually help people?
Right. That's where the rubber meets the road, right? It's like we've got all the ingredients, but now we need to cook up some amazing dishes.
I am starving for some practical knowledge, so hit me with your best recipe.
Okay, let's start with one I'm sure you've heard of, dialectical behavior therapy, or DBT, as the cool kids call it.
DBT. Okay, isn't that the one that helps people like manage really intense emotions?
Right.
Because I feel like that's something we could all use a little help with these days.
You're telling me. And you know what's fascinating about DBT is it was originally designed for folks who are struggling with borderline personality disorder.
Okay.
But its popularity has exploded because the skills that it teaches are so universally helpful.
So what are these magical DB2 skills?
So DBT focuses on four core areas:
Okay.
mindfulness, distress tolerance, emotional regulation,
Yeah.
and then interpersonal effectiveness. So think of it like you're building a toolbox
Okay.
for navigating life's challenges with more awareness and resilience.
Okay, mindfulness, I get that. Everyone and their mother is talking about meditation these days. But how do you actually tolerate distress? Isn't that like kind of the opposite of what we're wired to do?
Right, exactly. Our instinct is to often avoid or escape difficult emotions.
Right.
But DBT teaches us that we're actually capable of handling way more than we think we are.
Okay.
It's about finding ways to kind of ride out that emotional wave without like making things worse for ourselves.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Turner actually gave a really great example of this.
Oh, I love her examples.
She talked about using a technique called self-soothing during a moment of panic.
Okay.
So instead of getting swept away by that anxiety, she focused on engaging her senses,
Okay.
like noticing the cool sensation of water on her skin or listening to some calming music.
Interesting. So it's about finding a way to ground yourself in the present moment rather than like spiraling into those worst case scenarios in your head.
Exactly, yes. And that ties into another core skill of DBT, which is emotional regulation.
Okay.
And this isn't about suppressing our emotions,
Okay.
but learning to manage them in a healthy way.
Okay, so less stuffing it down and more like healthy coping mechanisms.
Got it. Okay, what about that last one? Interpersonal effectiveness. Is that just a fancy way of saying communication skills?
It's definitely about communication, but it
Yeah.
goes a little deeper than that.
Okay.
Interpersonal effectiveness is about building and maintaining healthy relationships,
Yeah.
setting boundaries, getting your needs met in a way that's mindful of other people.
So basically, essential life skills that should be taught in
Yeah,
school.
I know, right.
Now let's switch gears to an approach that's all about solutions.
Okay.
It's called, aptly named, solution-focused therapy.
Okay, I'm intrigued. Less dwelling on the problems, more focusing on what we can actually change. I
Yes.
like the sound of that. I like the sound of that a lot.
It's a really empowering approach
Yeah.
because it assumes that you already have the resources and the strengths within you to create that change.
Okay.
So instead of getting like bogged down in the why of your problems, solution-focused therapy helps you to focus on
Okay.
the how of achieving your goals.
So less woe is me and more how do I get to where I want to be?
Yes.
Love it. But how does that actually work, like in a therapy session?
And one of the most powerful techniques is called the miracle question.
Wait, does this involve a magic wand? Because I am
No
in.
magic wand required, but it can feel pretty magical.
Okay.
So imagine you go to sleep tonight,
Okay.
and by some miracle, the problem that brought you to therapy is solved.
Okay.
What would be different when you woke up? How would you know the problem was gone?
Wow. Okay. I can see how that would shift your perspective from like feeling stuck to actually envisioning possibilities.
Exactly. It helps you paint a picture of what you want your life to look like
Right.
and then work backwards to identify the steps to get there.
It's like reverse engineering your own happy ending.
Yes.
So cool. Okay, what's next on our therapy technique world tour?
Let's talk about narrative therapy.
Okay.
This approach views our problems as separate from ourselves
Okay.
and encourages us to kind of rewrite those internal narratives.
Oh, this sounds right up my alley. I'm a firm believer in the power of storytelling.
Me too. Narrative therapy recognizes that we all create stories about ourselves, about our experiences,
Right.
but sometimes those stories can become, you know, limiting or negative.
So it's like we become the unreliable narrators of our own lives.
Exactly. Yes.
Yeah.
And we might tell ourselves, I'm a failure or I'm not good enough, without even realizing those are just stories.
Right.
Those aren't facts.
They're not facts.
They're just stories.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how do you rewrite those negative narratives? Like, do you have to become some kind of self-help guru?
No, not at all. Narrative therapy uses very gentle but powerful techniques to help you identify those unhelpful stories and create new ones that are more empowering.
Okay.
One technique is called externalizing the problem.
Externalizing? Does that mean I can finally blame all my problems on my parents? Kidding. Mostly.
It's not about blame.
Okay.
But rather about separating yourself from the problem.
Okay.
So, for example, instead of saying, I'm an anxious person,
right,
you might say, anxiety's been a part of my story, but it doesn't define me.
Wow, that's a subtle shift, but I can see how that could be really powerful in changing how you see yourself and your ability to make changes.
Absolutely. And finally, let's zoom out to a broader perspective with family systems therapy.
Okay, family therapy. I feel like that can sometimes feel a little intimidating, just
yeah.
like you're airing all your dirty laundry to a stranger.
Yeah.
What's the basic idea here?
Yeah, so it's not about placing blame or anything like that.
Okay.
But about understanding how families function as a system. So imagine a mobile with all of its interconnected parts.
Okay.
If you move one piece, it affects that whole structure, right?
Right.
Families are very similar.
Okay, that's a great visual.
Yeah.
So it's not just about, like, individual therapy. It's about seeing how, like, everyone in the family plays a role in the overall dynamic.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Murray Bowen, he was a pioneer in this field, and he believed that families have these invisible patterns of behavior.
Okay.
And emotional reactivity that actually get passed down through generations.
Oh, wow.
He called it the multi-generational transmission process.
Oh, so those family patterns that we always joke about, like, oh, that's just how we are actually a thing.
They are a thing.
Oh, my God.
They are definitely a thing. And while it can be tempting to, like, want to blame our parents for all of our problems, Bowen's approach is more nuanced than that.
Okay. He emphasizes the importance of differentiation. Differentiation, like becoming your own unique snowflake, separate from your family.
That's a great way to put it. It's about developing a really clear sense of self, you know, within that family system.
Okay.
Being able to kind of hold on to your own thoughts and feelings and values, even when they differ from your family's.
That makes sense. But it also sounds really challenging, especially if you come from a family where, like, everyone's kind of expected to be on the same page all the time.
It is definitely a process.
Yeah.
It's not always easy. Bowen also identified a really common family dynamic called triangulation.
Triangulation.
Have you ever felt like you were caught in the middle of your parents' arguments?
Yeah. Who hasn't? It's like you're suddenly on stage with your parents and the spotlight is very uncomfortable.
That's triangulation in action. It's when tension between two people in a family gets, like, deflected onto a third person.
Oh.
Often a child.
Oh, okay.
So family systems therapy can help us to become aware of these patterns.
Okay.
And find healthier ways to kind of communicate and relate to each other.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here. Mindfulness, rewriting our narratives, family dynamics. It seems like these counseling techniques could honestly be applied in so many areas of life, even if you're not in, like, actual therapy.
That's the beauty of it. Whether you're dealing with a mental health challenge or just trying to navigate the ups and downs of life.
Right.
These approaches offer really valuable insights and tools for creating positive change.
I'm starting to feel like I need a whole notebook just to keep track of all these amazing approaches. But it also makes you wonder, with so many options, how do you even know which one is the right one? Like, it's like trying to choose a paint color when there are a million shades of white.
It can feel overwhelming, for sure.
Yeah.
But the good news is, therapy isn't a one-size-fits-all kind of deal.
Right.
Just like we wouldn't use a wrench to fix a leaky faucet, we wouldn't use the same therapy approach for every single person or every single problem.
So it's all about finding the right fit, the approach that resonates with your personality and your goals. But do most therapists, like, specialize in just one approach?
Some do. But a lot of therapists actually identify as integrative.
Okay.
Meaning they blend elements from different theories and techniques to create a more customized approach for each client.
Okay, I see.
It's like having a well-stocked tool belt.
Yeah.
And you choose, like, the best tool for the job, you know?
Oh, I love that analogy. So you might have your, like, go-to tools, but you're always ready to adapt.
Exactly. And there's actually a distinction between being eclectic and being integrative.
Oh, okay.
Dr. Turner explained it, that someone who's eclectic might use different techniques from various therapies, you know, maybe kind of in a more random way, you know.
Yeah.
But an integrative therapist, they have a primary theoretical orientation.
Okay.
It's like their home base, so to speak.
Okay.
And then they thoughtfully incorporate other approaches based on, you know, what that particular client needs.
So it's like the difference between throwing a bunch of ingredients together and actually following a recipe, but then adding your own, like, personal flair.
Perfect analogy. Yeah.
Okay, I like that.
And one specific integrative approach that Dr. Turner highlighted is called multimodal therapy.
Okay.
Developed by Arnold Lazarus. And it's based on the idea that we're complex beings.
Right.
With multiple dimensions.
Yes.
So it's not just our behaviors, but it's our emotions and our thoughts and our sensations, our relationships, even our biology. All of it plays a role.
Okay. So it's not just about, like, you know, fixing one thing. It's about understanding how all those pieces fit together. Kind of like those intricate mobiles that we were talking about earlier.
So, yes, multimodal therapy takes that whole person approach.
Okay.
Recognizing that to create lasting change, we need to address all aspects of ourselves.
This deep dive has honestly been such an eye-opener. Like, I feel like I've gained a whole new vocabulary for, like, understanding myself and the people around me.
Love that. That's what we love to hear. And remember, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There's a whole world of knowledge out there about these approaches.
Oh, you know me. I'm like a sucker for a good deep dive.
Of course.
I've already added like 10 books to my reading list. But before we go, I do have one final thought-provoking question for our listeners out there. Imagine you could design your own personalized counseling approach. And you can draw from all the like brilliant minds and techniques that we've explored today. What would it look like? What elements would you include? There's no right or wrong answer here. It's all about discovering what resonates most with you. Thanks for joining us on this fascinating journey into the world of counseling theories and techniques. We'll see you on the next deep dive.